Hello and welcome to Volume 46, Number 9 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 27th of February 2026. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Desney and Alison. And in the news, Galston FC is hoping for a new stadium. Punishment for a large meat theft. And watch out for bugs in the chocolate. In Grapevine Extra this week, with all the details for Vision Norfolk's March events, the week's TV and spring. First, though, a birthday. So it's many happy returns for Elizabeth Price, blowing out the candles on either Saturday or Sunday. Yes, it's a February the 29th birthday. Whichever you choose, Elizabeth, we hope that you have a good day. Okay, it's time for the first part of the news, so over to Desney and Alison.
Hello everybody, nice to be with you again. This is Desney and today I'm with Alison.
Hello everybody.
Let's start with some news. An organisation that recently marked half a century of providing vital services to communities across Norfolk and Suffolk has folded. The Lowestoft-based Access Community Trust has ceased trading and has entered administration. Its staff have been made redundant and numerous services have been shut, prompting East Suffolk Council to lead a coordinated multi-agency response to this development, with Suffolk County Council, key external partners and health partners. The Trust and its directors have not responded to the Mercury's calls for comment. The charitable non-profit organisation employed more than 200 staff and volunteers in Norfolk and Suffolk as it worked across more than 20 hubs and communities. A whistleblower said, "The sudden and devastating collapse of Access Community Trust comes as the 50-year-old charity has provided a lifeline to thousands of the region's most vulnerable people." An emergency all-staff meeting was held on Wednesday with the Board of Trustees. The whistleblower said, "We were informed that the charity is ceasing to trade with immediate effect and entering administration. On our scheduled payday today, dozens of staff were told they will not be paid for their last month of work. It has seen all Steamhouse cafes that run across Galston, King's Lynn, Ipswich and Bury St Edmunds, providing vital high street mental health drop-in support, close their doors today. In Lowestoft, all branches have closed, including the Bridgeview Centre in Commercial Road, Lowestoft, which provides assessment centre provision in supporting those who may be rough sleeping or at risk of rough sleeping. However, the 19-room Fife Centre in Belvedere Road, a supported housing scheme in Lowestoft, which was the Trust's first ever purpose-built hostel when it opened in 1980, remains open. Access Community Trust currently provides 87 bed spaces for homeless and rough sleeper services across East Suffolk. An East Suffolk Council spokesman said, "Our priority is to ensure that nobody is left without a safe place to stay or access to essential support services." The Trust also operates the Waveney Centre in Beccles, with further community hubs, groups and services running across Bury St Edmunds, Ipswich, Thetford, King's Lynn, Galston and Great Yarmouth in jeopardy. It had operated Great Yarmouth's Venetian waterways. The whistleblower added, "This is a catastrophic failure of a 50-year-old institution. we are calling for an immediate explanation from the Board of Trustees and asking local authorities what emergency measures are being taken to support the service users who will be in crisis due to this atrocity.
Council tax bills in Great Yarmouth are set to rise by nearly 3%, amid frustration that the town has been left behind by a government funding shake-up supposed to help deprived areas. Great Yarmouth Borough Council set its budget for 2026-27 at a meeting on Tuesday, when councillors agreed to increase the authority's portion of borough residents' council tax bills by 2.99%. This means that for an average Band D property in the borough, Town Hall's part of the annual council tax bill will be £198.25, an increase of £5.76 per annum from last year. The move comes after Norfolk County Council recently agreed to increase its share of council tax by 5% for 2026-27, and Norfolk Police Authority earlier agreed to increase its share by 4.53%. By comparison, the Borough Council's 2.99% rise is the smallest percentage increase of the three major precepting authorities in Norfolk. Councillors also agreed that council home rents will increase by 4.8% for 2026-27, which means the weekly rent on a two-bedroomed property will go up on average £4.53, from £94.52 to £99.05. The meeting also heard that the council's overall net budget for 2026-27 is in the region of £17.5 million, up from £16.9 million in 2025-26. To balance the budget, the council plans to make £150,000 in savings and draw £214,000 from reserves. This is notably less than in 2025-26, when the council needed £600,000 in savings and £613,000 from reserves. Councillor Carl Smith, council leader, said, "Despite the challenging financial landscape, we have been able to produce a prudent and balanced budget. The tax rises follow a major shake-up in how the government funds local councils, which now takes into account relative deprivation, meaning authorities serving more deprived populations should, in principle, receive more. For the Borough Council, this has meant an increase of 14.7% over the next 3 years. However, this is still low compared to the average increase across the sector of 24.3%. Councillor Smith said, "We have ensured we can continue to deliver cost-effective services for our residents, even if it is hard to understand why our settlement from the government should be almost 10% less than some other deprived parts of the country."
A hit television drama is filming on the Norfolk coast this week. The critically acclaimed ITV crime drama series Unforgotten is filming parts of its seventh series in Caister, Winterton and Great Yarmouth. The drama, which aired its sixth series this month, centres around a team of London detectives as they solve cases of disappearance and murder. Written by Chris Lang and directed by Andy Wilson, it aired its first series in October 2015. Its cast includes Sanjeev Bhaskar, who plays Detective Inspector Sonny Khan in the series. Irish actor Sinead Keenan plays Detective Inspector Jesse James and is Khan's partner in solving crime. The cast and crew will set up their base in Caister Beach car park, with the first full day of filming to take place on Wednesday. Parts of the new series will be shot at various locations along the Norfolk coast until the end of the week. The production crew will take up around two-thirds of Caister Beach car park over the course of the filming. Space will be allocated at the far end of the car park for Caister Lifeboat and the people who come to the coast. People coming to the car park are encouraged to follow the instructions and guidance of security staff on site. The show, produced by Main Street Pictures, has received critical acclaim, with Scottish actor Mark Bonner winning the 2017 BAFTA Scotland for Best Actor in Television for the second series.
Gorleston Football Club has lodged plans for a new multi-million pound community hub, including football pitches, grandstands and a cafe. Gorleston Football Club is seeking planning permission from Great Yarmouth Borough Council to build a new stadium and associated facilities at their original home, the Recreation Ground, on Church Lane. Architect Chaplin Ferrant, who designed The Nest for Norwich City's Community Sports Foundation, have drawn up the plans with the club. The scheme includes an all-weather artificial pitch, grass pitches, grandstands and a community cafe. Programmes would run from 9am to 9pm Monday to Friday, with club football at weekends. In a nod to the club's history at the Recreation Ground, the all-weather 3G pitch would be laid on the exact site where the club's first teams played in 1889. The skate park and playground will remain on site, and dog walkers and other users will be welcome to use the field and the facilities. The plans come more than 4 years after the club left their previous home of Emerald Park, where they had played since 1983, with plans to relocate to a new £900,000 ground at East Norfolk Sixth Form College. However, those plans later fell through, with club bosses saying it was not a viable option. The Greens' first team and reserves then shared Lowestoft Town's ground, Crown Meadow, before the club signed an agreement with Great Yarmouth Town to play at its Wellesley ground. Club chairman Jamie Humphreys said, "Gorleston needs to play in Gorleston, and we are now able to return to our real home. Creating a new permanent home is about more than football. We now have the chance to create something that everyone can use, a lasting legacy with year-round community use, youth development, education and health initiatives at its heart, while supporting grassroots football." Plans for the transformation of the recreation ground were shared with nearby residents at a public event at St Andrew's Church Hall. Gorleston FC and architects from Chaplin Ferrant answered questions throughout the event. Lifelong supporters Nigel Brown, Adrian Coleman, Dave Mattin and Phil Keenan said emotions ran deep about Gorleston returning to a permanent home in the heart of the community. Mr Brown said its homeless seasons had been soul-destroying, like part of us has been taken away. "Gorleston should play in Gorleston. A club is about the community, for the community and at the heart of the community. It has been heartbreaking watching supporter numbers dwindle as Gorleston has played at other grounds since leaving Emerald Park. We don't see the older people anymore, the people who had been connected to the club all their lives." Darren Nixon, Gorleston FC's youth secretary, runs 21 teams of boys and girls and training sessions for 3 to 16-year-olds. He said, "This is about far more than a football ground. It is about the community, yoga classes, mental health provision, leisure, a cafe, a meeting point, disability sports and so much more."
Here's an interesting story from the Time and Tide Museum. A care home manager has come face to face with a model of her teenage self at a local museum. Danielle Bullant, manager of Eversley Lodge Care Home in Yarmouth, was just 18 and pregnant with her son Jay when she was invited to model for a figure featured at the Time and Tide Museum. She rediscovered the figure while on a trip to the museum with care home residents. The model, cast to represent a woman from the historic Rose, was made to look older to reflect the hardships of the time. Miss Bullant said, "To create a mould, I had to stand for hours covered in plaster of Paris from my shoulders to my ankles. They then took hundreds of photographs of my face and hands from so many different angles." She said it was a bit weird coming face to face with her younger self and added, "The model even has the same moles on its face as me and the hands uncannily resemble mine." Miss Bullant said the opportunity to be a model arose through the charity GFS Platform, which supported young women in the town at that time. She said, "My midwife put me in contact with the charity GFS Platform. As part of its community engagement, the museum service reached out to GFS Platform, and that was how I got involved. It increased my determination to make something of myself and not be a statistic." Her son Jay, now around 6 foot tall, joined the group on the museum trip.
Frustrated councillors have accused a house builder and highway bosses of showing a lack of respect for Caister Village over major roadworks. Caister Parish Council says villagers and bus drivers have raised serious concerns about the safety of the revamped junction at Prince of Wales Road, despite Persimmon Homes and Norfolk County Council insisting it meets all required standards. People have also questioned the width of a new shared cycle and footway and the lack of safety barriers at the Norwich Road roundabout, described as the busiest junction in Caister. The council has criticised Persimmon for destroying a wildflower area at the entrance to the village, digging up long-standing daffodil plantings and damaging planters without speaking to anyone locally beforehand. It shows a lack of respect for our village, the council said. Many will remember a young man lost his life at this junction, so it is important that safety is paramount. The row follows anger over an earlier scheme on Ormsby Road, which was meant to discourage drivers from using the village as a cut-through. The parish council has branded those measures a complete failure, saying speeding continues and one bus pull-in had to be redesigned after installation. A spokesperson for Persimmon Homes Anglia said the company had worked closely with the county council to deliver a series of highway upgrades and pedestrian improvements in Caister, which fully accords with our planning permission. Every stage has been inspected and signed off to ensure the upgrades meet the required design and safety standards, they said. It is important to recognise that we're in the middle of construction works, and therefore comments about the look and appearance of parts of the scheme are premature. Norfolk County Council said the scheme was designed to discourage through traffic, with a full safety audit to follow once construction is finished. Persimmon is due to attend the Parish Council's March meeting.
Three men have been fined for drinking alcohol in the town. Yanis Goodlick, Urius Skorohodvos and Carolus Yasmontas were each convicted and fined £100 for drinking alcohol in St George's Park, Trafalgar Road and George Street. The Public Spaces Protection Order, PSPO, introduced by Great Yarmouth Borough Council last year, prohibits public drinking, begging, urinating in public, spitting and riding bicycles or e-scooters on paths in the town centre. Councillor Paul Wells, portfolio holder for licensing, said, "As a council, we are determined to do all we can to deal more effectively with antisocial behaviour in the borough. These prosecutions once again demonstrate we won't tolerate highly visible street drinking and people feeling intimidated." All three men were convicted in their absence at a hearing held at Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court. Goodlick, 52, of North Drive, Skorohodovs, 42, of Kimberley Terrace, and Yasmontas, 31, of North Quay, were each ordered to pay a £40 victim surcharge and £535.50 in costs to be collected within 28 days.
The co-founder of a pet rescue centre has slammed owners who use it as a dumping ground for unwanted animals. Sarah Evans from Beccles launched East Coast Pet Rescue with her friend Faye Howard from Hemsby in 2021. Over the past 5 years, the duo and their dedicated team of fosterers have taken in more than 2,000 pets from across the region. But Ms Evans has now spoken out against people who get pets without the money or desire to care for them properly before leaving them in the care of the non-profit organisation. "We are not a dumping ground for your unwanted animals that you can't be bothered with anymore, or probably shouldn't have got in the first place, because you couldn't actually afford to give them what they needed," she said. "Neutering is a basic requirement for keeping an animal, and if you haven't done it, we will ask for a donation to help the rescue get that done as soon as possible. We do not have an endless pot of money stashed away to pay for everyone's animals. You wouldn't take your car to the garage and expect a free MOT or service, or for someone else to pay for it, so why expect that with animals?" She said she was particularly frustrated by the casual way in which people reach out and ask her to take their pets. She added that people giving up their animals often give reasons such as their children are no longer interested. East Coast Pet Rescue is currently caring for 25 cats, 10 guinea pigs and 9 rabbits. And last summer, Ms Evans was sharing her home with 28 cats. The team is fundraising to build another pen to allow them to take on more animals. And more information can be found on the East Coast Pet Rescue Facebook page.
Tributes have been paid after the death of a great Yarmouth councillor who was also a former mayor of the town. Malcolm Bird, who died on Monday, February the 23rd, at the age of 77, was described as a real gentleman, as Great Yarmouth Borough councillors from across the political spectrum paid tribute. Mr Bird was first elected to represent the town's Central and Northgate ward in 2014 as a UKIP councillor. During that time, in 2016, he became Great Yarmouth's mayor, the first and only UKIP councillor to hold that position. A year later, he crossed the floor to join the Conservative Party and was re-elected to the council in 2018 when he stood for the Caister South ward, which he continued to represent until his death. As a mark of respect, the borough flag at the town hall in Great Yarmouth was flown at half-mast as the council met on Tuesday, February the 24th. During the meeting, Conservative Council leader Carl Smith said, "The passing of Malcolm Bird is extremely sad news. He was a real gentleman and very well respected across the chamber. I'm sure all members will join me in sending our heartfelt condolences to his family and friends. He was a fantastic mayor and was respected everywhere he went in the borough. He will be sadly missed by family, friends, and the wider community." Mr Bird served on a string of committees at the council, including Housing and Neighbourhoods, Economic Development and the Environment Committee. He also chaired the Standards Committee from 2021 until 2023. He was the Vice Chairman of the Authority's Development Control Committee and also served on the Licensing Committee. Councillor Michael Giel, on behalf of the Labour Group, said, "I knew Malcolm for more than 30 years. He was a good man who did a good job and did it well. We all understand we are here to serve the people of the borough, and Malcolm did it better than most. Mr Bird, a father and grandfather who was married to Donna, died at home with his family by his side. A funeral service will take place at Galston Crematorium at 4 p.m. on Friday, March the 6th. Mr Bird's death will trigger a by-election in Great Yarmouth Borough Council's Caister South ward."
And in another tribute, "He was among the last survivors of his generation in Cobham, a close-knit area of Great Yarmouth. Austin Billy Bell, who has died at the age of 96, was what you might call a real character by any standards. Hard-working and fond of a pub sing-along, he always wore a trilby hat, which he would use as an ashtray, tapping his cigarette onto the top when there was nowhere else to dispose of the ash. He lived on his farm in Cobham for the majority of a life, which saw him still cutting the grass and swinging an axe to split logs well into his 90s. Mr Bell was born in November 1929 on Century Road in Cobham, the middle son of Jack Bell and Ellen Church. The family later moved to Galston, and as a young man, Mr Bell worked in the scrap and rag trade on Baker Street with his father and his brothers, John and Gordon. After the Second World War, he served 2 years national service in the army. He married childhood sweetheart Barbara Johnson in 1950, and they lived in a prefab in Galston where they had 5 children, Billy Jr., Carol, Lorraine, and twins Michael and Paul. In the late 1960s, Mr Bell bought 4 acres in Cobham, which he called New Cut Farm, and where he built a modular wooden bungalow. In the early days, the farm was not connected to the electricity grid. It was powered instead by a generator running in an old railway carriage and connected to the house by a long cable, which ran through a keyhole in the back door. At night, before going to bed, Mr Bell would tug on the cable to turn off the generator. His daughter, Lorraine Davidson, said fondly, "It was like the Waltons growing up on the farm." She also said her father was known for his hard work and sometimes working 7 days a week, 365 days a year. He got bored easily sitting about. He would turn his hand to anything to make some money, she added. Over the years, Mr. Bell ran Bell Sheds and Fencing, worked as a timber merchant, a landau driver and a cabbie, and kept pigs on the farm. In the mid-1970s, during Yarmouth's offshore boom years, he built a skeet range for shooting with the help of some Americans who had come to work in the oil and gas industry. Outside work, he loved to sing and play the banjo and mouth organ. Nights out in the pub would often see him ask the bands if he could have a turn. Country and Western music was his favourite, and his party pieces were A Pub With No Beer by Slim Dusty and Putting On the Style by Lonnie Donegan. His wife Barbara died in 1998, aged 66. Mr. Bell died on January the 29th. His funeral will take place on March the 4th at St. Andrew's Church in Galston, followed by a private family funeral. His wake will be held at Borough Hall in Borough Castle. The family will join other mourners after the burial. Miss Davidson said, "Dad will be remembered far and wide as a great character by all who knew him."
And here's a report of an inquest into another great Yarmouth character, an inquest into street busker Ant Arnold. Tragic details about the death of a popular street busker have been revealed at his inquest. Ant Arnold, who lived in Great Yarmouth, was known for his statue-style tribute act on Regent Road in the town and in Norwich city centre. The 58-year-old entertained people in Norfolk with his Charlie Chaplin act and had worked for almost 40 years performing as a range of other characters, including a robot. An inquest into his death was opened by area coroner Joanna Thompson at Norfolk Coroner's Court this week. His full name was given as Anthony Brian Mailing Arnold, and the court heard he lived in Yarmouth's Albion Road, where he also died on January the 7th. It was said that his body had been identified by his GP, and his daughter had provided his date and place of birth to the court as December the 17th, 1967, in Barkingside, Essex. Area coroner Joanna Thompson added, "Dr. Lonsdale has given a provisional cause of death as primarily incised wounds to the neck and wrists. Evidence is now being obtained ahead of a full inquest due to take place at the court on August the 5th. Mr. Arnold moved to Yarmouth in 2019 and lived with epilepsy. He was left with the condition after suffering a serious head injury when he was hit by a car at the age of 14. In 2020, he told the Mercury he was lucky to have his talent to fall back on, before adding, "The best way I can deal with it is to stay on a high all the time and keep smiling." Since his death, people have been sharing their memories of Mr. Arnold, describing him as amazing.
Don't forget that the Vision Norfolk March programme is in Grapevine Extra after we've given you all the week's news. First, though, here are a few items of news in brief.
A woman has been arrested following a drugs raid. Officers issued a drugs warrant at a property in Plain Road, Galston, on Friday morning. Upon entry, they discovered a large quantity of cannabis, along with drugs that were believed to be Class A. Various mobile phones, drug paraphernalia, and a car that was suspected of being stolen were also seized from the scene. A woman in her 40s was arrested on suspicion of being concerned in the supply of drugs. She was taken to Great Yarmouth Police Station for questioning, where she remains. Police officers have been continuing to clamp down on antisocial behaviour in the town. The Safer Neighbourhood team at Great Yarmouth Police have been out on foot patrols combating antisocial behaviour in the town centre. Some of the work they did while out on patrol on Monday morning included issuing 3 public spaces protection order breaches to 2 men and a woman, seizing 1 e-scooter in the marketplace, arresting a man for a public order offence, dealing with a man being aggressive at the library, and carrying out a stop search. You can report antisocial behaviour on the Norfolk Police website. Telecoms giant BT has been given the green light to replace traditional phone boxes with tall digital advertising screens at 4 locations across Great Yarmouth. the Borough Council has granted planning permission for BT to install the so-called street hubs on pavements at the Marketplace, Market Gates, King Street and Regent Road. Applications to install screens on Broad Row and outside the Sea Life Centre are still being considered. The plans include the removal of 12 existing payphones across the town. The street hubs are double-sided digital screens standing almost 3 metres tall and displaying advertisements. They would also offer free Wi-Fi, free phone calls, device charging and access to council services via a touchscreen tablet. A woman wants to open a dog grooming salon in Bradwell Village. Claire Lynch has applied to Great Yarmouth Borough Council to convert a garage on Lord Montgomery Way in Bradwell. The application states the salon would operate on a one-to-one appointment only basis, with a maximum of 3 dogs at any one time from the same household. There would also be 2 extra parking spaces. Bradwell Parish Council said they will not object to the plan, providing there is enough parking.
Boaters in the Broads have been hit with fines totalling £41,000 for not registering vessels and paying to use the waterways amid a rise in cases. Broads Authority officials have taken 35 people to court in the past 4 weeks and have successfully prosecuted people for 50 offences related to not paying toll fees. Anyone using the Broads, be it by paddleboard, a motor cruiser or sailing boat, must pay the charge. But this past year, there has been a significant rise in cases of people avoiding paying it. A spokesman for the Broads Authority said late payment of tolls causes lots of extra work and costs for the authority, requiring robust action to chase those that refuse to pay. Prosecution is a last resort once all other avenues have failed to secure payment. The Broads Authority urges anyone having difficulty paying to contact the tolls team at the earliest opportunity. A former town centre hair salon could be brought back into use as a one-bedroom home. Eduardo Santana has applied for planning permission to convert 1 St George's Plain, a Grade 2 listed end-of-terrace property next to St George's Theatre in Great Yarmouth. The planning documents say the change of use would keep the building's appearance exactly as it is at present. Prior to its recent use, the building for many years housed the first of the Zaks chain of restaurants. 2 men are to be sentenced after admitting supplying Class A drugs in the town. Alan Barros, 25, and Jack Edwards, 26, were both charged with possession with intent to supply heroin and crack cocaine in Great Yarmouth on May the 13th last year. Barros of South Quay, Yarmouth, and Edwards of Blake Road, Yarmouth, will be sentenced at Norwich Crown Court on Friday, March the 13th. It comes after both men admitted the offences following their arrests. And finally, a fish and chip shop has closed suddenly. Monty's Fish and Chips on Beach Road in Hemsby announced the business stopped trading with immediate effect on Monday, February the 22nd. They said the closure of the shop, which opened in early 2022, was due to circumstances beyond their control. The owners thanked their customers and said they will miss them all dearly. They also urged people to support other businesses along Beach Road this tourist season.
Right, it's time for Desney and Alison to get you fully up to date with the rest of this week's local news.
A major exhibition of work by celebrated Great Yarmouth potter and artist Ernie Childs is to go on show later this month. The Great Yarmouth Pottery Exhibition opens at the Ferini Art Gallery on All Saints Road in Pakefield, Lowestoft, on Friday, February the 27th, and runs until March the 22nd, bringing together dozens of his limited edition tankards and other ceramics. The show is drawn from the private collection of Mike Millward, who has spent more than three decades tracking down pieces made by Mr. Childs at Great Yarmouth Pottery from the early 1980s until he stopped production in 2013. Mr. Childs, who died in 2019, aged 72, was known not only for his pottery, but also as a painter, sculptor, and maritime historian. Many of his tankards were produced in short runs to commemorate local landmarks, lifeboat stations, football clubs, and historical events. Mr. Millward, who estimates he owns around 350 pieces, said the Ferini exhibition may be the first time a substantial body of Mr. Childs' work has been shown together outside the old pottery itself. He said, "It's like most collections. You start off with a few pieces that take your interest, then add a few more and think, I haven't got that one, and before you know it, the shelves get a bit full." Ernie's work is usually buried away in antique or charity shops, but when you get a good number together and realise just how much research and craftsmanship went into them, it's a bit wow, and we wanted artists and ceramicists to see that too. The exhibition has been put together with Ferini owner Michaela Hobbs, whose gallery specialises in showcasing East Anglian artists. Mr. Child's widow, Karen, an accomplished artist who still runs art classes in Great Yarmouth, has supported the project, and some pieces may be put up for sale to help cover the costs of staging the show.
A campaign has raised more than £10,000 to help make essential adaptations to a disabled girl's home. Two-year-old Ayla Dexter from Great Yarmouth suffers from hypotonic cerebral palsy, brain damage and a vision impairment. Her family have been seeking to raise £13,000 to cover costs for an extension, which will include a wet room and a physiotherapy area. Among the contributors to the fund were Claxton Engineering, Craft Catering and Great Yarmouth Masonic Association, who each helped boost donations by £1,000. The fundraiser, begun by Ayla's parents, Courtney and Jamari, is being pursued after a council stated they are unlikely to be able to provide the necessary help. The council has reportedly stated that even if a request for assistance was approved, it could take years to process. Sharing their gratitude online, the family said, "We're reaching out to ask for your support in raising up to £13,000 for our brave little girl, Ayla. Every donation, no matter how small, brings us closer to that dream." The GoFundMe page remains open for donations. Search for Raising Funds for Ayla's Physio and Wet Room.
Shifting sands on a fast-changing part of the coast have unearthed the remains of a mystery shipwreck. The large part of the wooden structure of a vessel was discovered on Hemsby Beach. The wreck was posing a hazard, so has been removed by the village's lifeboat crew, but research is now underway to try to identify the vessel it came from. A spokesman for Hemsby Lifeboat said, "Our coxswain took a close look, and even at first glance it was clear that this wasn't anything modern. The construction suggested real age, including the use of wooden retaining pegs rather than metal fixings, a fascinating glimpse into how vessels were built long before today's methods. At low tide, parts of it were exposed and could hurt people walking nearby, while at high tide it lurked beneath the water, creating a hazard for those who did not know it was there. For this reason, the wreck was moved to a safer location." The spokesman added, "This is a good reminder that our coastline is always changing, and what's hidden beneath the sand or the water can be just as dangerous as it is interesting." A man who sent a video of a girl being abused to others online claimed he had been involved in the sexual abuse of children, a court has heard. Peter Bellingham told online users of a Kick account, looked at by those who were into young filth, that he had abused female children. Norwich Crown Court heard the claim, not understood to be true, was made by the 58-year-old to others involved in a chat, including an undercover police officer. Duncan O'Donnell, prosecuting, said the covert officer was deployed after police discovered an account linked to him had been used to upload indecent images. Bellingham, who was part of a Kick account group for adults interested in young filth, had made claims to others, including the officer he had sexually abused girls. Although there was no evidence to suggest this had happened, Mr. O'Donnell said Bellingham then distributed a Category A video of a girl, depicting a young girl aged about 8 being abused. The prosecutor said police were to find numerous indecent chats on his phone, as well as indecent images showing children. Bellingham, previously of St. Hilda's Crescent, Galston, appeared at court for sentencing, having admitted distributing a Category A image, the most serious, of a child on June the 25th, 2024. He also admitted a further 2 offences of distributing indecent images in June 2024, as well as 3 offences of making indecent images of children in June 2024. Judge Anthony Bate said Bellingham had led a respectable life, but had a darker side involving him making and distributing illegal images of children. He said the images Bellingham involved himself with were shocking and driving harm to real children who are physically, emotionally and psychologically affected by the abuse they suffer. But taking into account Bellingham's previous good character and pleas to the offences, Judge Bate imposed an 18-month prison sentence, suspended for 2 years. John Morgans, mitigating for Bellingham, said the defendant, who has no previous convictions, was thoroughly ashamed of what he had done. He said Bellingham could not be more sorry, but had distributed just 1 Category A image while in a group chat situation. He said Bellingham was remorseful and would never commit these sort of offences again. Bellingham was also given up to 35 days rehabilitation activity requirement, RAR, and 240 hours unpaid work. He was also made the subject of a sexual harm prevention order for 10 years and also put on the sex offenders register for 10 years.
A family purchased a tub of hot chocolate to enjoy during a weekend on the Norfolk Broads, but it was not the treat they hoped for. In a grim twist, it actually contained a number of live bugs. One man in the party, who wishes to remain anonymous, said they saw the Harris and James product in a third-party shop in Reedham and expected a premium experience. Videos and images showed the creatures wriggling inside the tub of cocoa flakes. A Harris and James spokesman said the item was promptly refunded and a full internal investigation was launched, including a review of the relevant production batch records, quality control documentation and pest control monitoring logs. The Beccles-based business, which is known for making coffee and chocolate and also nuts, runs its own venues across Norfolk and Suffolk, formally documented the reports and alerted Environmental Health. After months of correspondence, Harris and James also offered a goodwill gesture in recognition of the distress described, despite no production fault being identified. The customer said this was a £50 Harris and James voucher, which he declined and suggested the sum be donated to charity instead. The Harris and James spokesman added, they take all product quality concerns extremely seriously. He stressed that no manufacturing issues were found, no other complaints were reported for the batch, no illness was reported and no medical treatment was required. Once products leave our production facility, storage and handling conditions are managed independently, with the supply chain and at retail level, he said. As with all dry food products, environmental conditions over time can be relevant factors. However, our investigation found no evidence of any shortcoming in our production processes.
Stables in Filby could be turned into a family home under new plans. Matthew Barnett has applied for planning permission to convert the stable block at Summer Meadow Stables in the village into a 3-bedroom household. The site was gifted to Mr. Barnett by his grandfather 26 years ago, and he has since operated the building and adjacent land as commercial stables for 9 years. It's located to the south of the A1064 between Filby and Caister, and contains an L-shaped stable block. The stables were granted planning approval in 2013 and built in 2014. However, they now contain only one horse, and its present use is no longer considered to be financially viable. Given his family connection to the land, Mr. Barnett now wants to use the building as a custom-built family home. The current structure, which contains five individual stables, would be reused and retain the existing concrete floor slab, as well as the current driveway. An open-plan living room and kitchen would be built, with three ensuite bedrooms, an office room, toilet, plant room and snug room also created. No boundary works would be needed, leaving the hedgerows, boundary post and rail fencing untouched. Mature trees lining the street would also not be touched. In addition, the proposal seeks to add electric vehicle charging points onto the site and install solar panels on the roof with battery storage. It would reduce the rear concrete yard and convert it into a garden, while the hard car parking surface would be reduced to create a smaller residential driveway. A decision on the planning application is expected by the 2nd of April.
An illegal immigrant was caught supplying drugs in Norfolk after a woman died from a suspected overdose. Sydney Saar, a Portuguese national who was deported in 2024 following a previous drug sentence, had been supplying drugs in Great Yarmouth via the Rico County line between January the 7th and January the 21st this year. The 27-year-old had been staying in a flat above the Duke of Wellington pub in Yarmouth, which police attended in connection with the drugs line. It came after a woman in her 40s died of a suspected drugs overdose at her home address in the town on January the 18th. A review of the deceased woman's mobile phone showed contact with the Rico drugs line and messages advertising drugs for sale. Norwich Crown Court heard officers went to arrest Saar on January the 20th, but as they arrived, the defendant jumped out of the window and fled police. Samantha Lowther, prosecuting, said police gave chase and Saar was apprehended about half a mile away. The defendant delivered a flying kick at one of the officers who chased Saar and managed to bring him to the ground despite being punched. Saar was searched and found to have the cannabis on him, as well as an iPhone and SIM card, which was the Rico Drugs Line handset. He also had £1,178 in cash, while a later search also found another mobile phone concealed in his underwear. Officers also searched his Yarmouth address, where wraps of heroin worth £280 were found, along with scales, a knife and wraps of cocaine. Saar, of Sackville Place, Yarmouth, appeared at Crown Court, sitting at Norwich Magistrates Court on Monday, February the 23rd, for sentencing. It was after Saar, who had previous convictions for 27 offences, admitted conspiracy to supply heroin, possession with intent to supply heroin, and being concerned in the supply of crack cocaine. He also admitted assault by beating of an emergency worker, possession of cannabis and acquiring criminal property. He was handed a 4-year jail sentence for setting up and running the Rico County line. Jailing Saar for 4 years, recorder John Brooke Smith said the defendant played a significant role in the drug supply. Rob Pollington, mitigating, conceded his client was an impulsive individual who had an unenviable record and played a significant role supplying directly to drug users. Mr. Pollington said Saar, who has 2 children, a father and a sister living in this country, had come back following his previous deportation wanting to see his family. But the barrister accepted Saar would be deported again following his current sentence. Detective Inspector Joe Minnis from the Norfolk County Lines team said this was a complex investigation which began with the tragic death of a woman. Officers carried out detailed inquiries, including analysis of mobile phone evidence, which led directly to Saar, who was swiftly arrested. I would appeal to concerned members of the public to share information online via the Norfolk Constabulary website through calling 101 or by anonymously reporting through Crime Stoppers.
Two teenagers who supplied ecstasy to a girl who later died could face further charges, it has emerged. Nathan Lafitte and Kian Lockett, both 18, were charged with supplying MDMA, the chemical term for ecstasy, and being concerned in its supply. It came after the death of 15-year-old Lily McCarthy, who died in hospital having taken ecstasy. Emergency services were called to Hopton at 12:30 a.m. on Saturday the 24th of January, after reports that a girl had become unwell. Miss McCarthy, who was from the Galston area, was taken by ambulance to the nearby James Paget Hospital, but died a short time later. On Wednesday the 25th of February, Lafitte of no fixed address and Lockett of King Street, Yarmouth, appeared at Norwich Crown Court, accused of supplying MDMA to Miss McCarthy and another girl, who cannot be named for legal reasons. But Ed Renvoys, prosecuting, said neither defendant should have the charges put to them at this stage. The prosecutor said the Crown were giving consideration as to whether other possible charges could yet be brought against the two young defendants in relation to the death of Lily McCarthy. Mr. Renvoys said he was unable at this stage to say whether further charges will flow or not. We simply don't have the relevant information to make that decision, he added. The court was told it would be likely to be another 2 months before this could be decided, as they were awaiting both post-mortem and toxicology results. Judge Alice Robinson fixed a provisional trial date of 27th of July for a case expected to last up to 2 weeks. The case was adjourned until the 24th of April for a further case management hearing, when the Crown will be expected to indicate whether there will be further charges or not. Lafitte, who wore a grey jumper, and Lockett, who wore a black T-shirt, both appeared in court via video link from Norwich Prison and spoke only to confirm their names and details. Lafitte was represented by Michael Clare and Lockett by Ian James. Both defendants were remanded in custody. As previously reported, the devastated family of Miss McCarthy issued a heartfelt tribute to the teen.
Three new bungalows have been approved for Acle Village despite strong objections from the parish council and neighbours. James Short has been granted planning permission by Broadland District Council to build the single-storey houses on farmland off Dangate Lane in Acle. The plans had faced 11 objections from Acle Parish Council and the neighbours who raised concerns about building outside the development boundary, loss of hedgerow and highway safety. Objectors also warned about flood risk and the impact on local wildlife, as well as fears the scheme could set a precedent for further development. Planning officers accepted there would be some harm from building on a greenfield site, but said this was limited and partly mitigated by retaining most of the mature hedge along Damgate Lane. They said the landscape impact did not outweigh the benefits of providing three additional houses in a sustainable location at a time when the District Council cannot demonstrate a five-year housing land supply. The scheme is subject to conditions on drainage, biodiversity enhancements and protecting the hedge.
A Norwich man has pleaded guilty to carrying a knife to a police station, following threats to kill him. Sardem Mohammed, aged 20, of Buttermere Road, was said to have been a target of County Line's drug dealers who tried to recruit him. He appeared at Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court, where he pleaded guilty to possessing an offensive weapon in a public place. He admitted to carrying a lock knife with him on Howard Street North in Great Yarmouth on January the 19th as he walked towards the town's police station. Mohammed had been living in the town at the time. Ellen Connolly, prosecuting, said the defendant contacted police, stating that an associate had made threats to kill him. The defendant was walking from his home address to Great Yarmouth Police Station to speak with officers. Around 20 minutes later, the defendant arrived at the police station and was taken to an interview room. Upon entering the room, the defendant handed over a lock knife. The defendant explained that he had told the person who had threatened him that he had the knife on him for his own protection. Mohammed was subsequently arrested by police for possessing the blade in a public place. He admitted to carrying the lock knife and said that he had it on him for the entire journey as he walked from Albion Road to the police station. Andrew Spence, mitigating, said it was not an associate, it was a would-be associate. Attempts have been made since December 2024 to recruit him into County Line's drug dealing. To his credit, he has steadfastly refused. He received very serious threats on his own life. He called 999 and was told to get himself to the police station. He felt extremely vulnerable. There was no intention by him to use the knife in question. It was just to be used as a deterrent to anybody who might think of attacking. The probation service has been asked to compile a report prior to his sentencing. He will be sentenced at Norwich Magistrates Court on the 22nd of April. He has been granted unconditional bail. There was a Kurdish interpreter in court.
A woman has been taken to hospital after a crash near a school. Crews were called to Beccles Road in Galston after a two-vehicle collision at 8:21 a.m. on Thursday. The road was blocked following the crash, and many locals described seeing emergency vehicles right outside the school gates of Rorton Infant Academy. Officers at Norfolk Constabulary confirmed that one person was taken to the James Paget Hospital as a precautionary measure.
A Great Yarmouth man has appeared in court, charging with stealing over £1,000 worth of meat. Upperwood Farm Shop in Maltby was targeted in December when a thief loaded a trolley full of produce and fled without paying. The theft dealt a huge hit to the farm shop, run by Erin Shreve and her husband, just before Christmas. The man has now appeared in court and is waiting to be sentenced for stealing the meat. A spokesperson for Norfolk Constabulary said Glenn Miller, aged 53, of Marine Parade, Great Yarmouth, has been charged with stealing meat to the value of £1,100 on the 20th of December 2025. He appeared at Norwich Magistrates Court on the 20th of January 2026, where he was remanded in custody. He is due to appear at Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court on the 18th of March 2026 for sentencing. The farm shop is an honesty shop, meaning it relies on the goodwill of customers to come in and pay for the produce without any staff manning the store. Speaking after the theft, Mrs. Shreve said, "It is a huge hit for a family shop, a small family business. It is not just the money, it's the work that has gone into it. It is 2 years' worth of work."
Well, that's the news for this week, but don't go away as we welcome you to Grapevine Extra. Well, time flies when you're having fun, as they say, and with a new month imminent, here's the Vision Norfolk lineup for March. Right, pin back your luggles, as Cyril Fletcher was wont to say, as we start off with news of a brain teaser on Monday the 2nd of March with the Hub Quiz from 11 until 1. That's followed by the Yarmouth Hub Games afternoon from 2 until 4. Tuesday the 3rd is a case to coffee morning from 10 until 12, with another one on Tuesday the 17th. First of the month's GY coffee mornings is on Wednesday the 4th of March from 10 until 12, with others on the 11th, 18th and 25th at the same times. Thursday the 5th of March sees the Ormsby coffee morning from 10 until 12, which is at Hurst's Farm Shop and Cafe. Thursday the 5th of March has the Cribbage Group from 10 until 12, which is repeated on the 12th, 19th and 26th. The first Pub Club is on the 5th from 1 until 3, which is repeated on the 19th at the same times. Friday the 6th of March sees Weaving from 10 until 12, which also happens on Friday the 13th and the 20th. Also on Friday the 6th of March is Fishy Friday from 1 until 2. On Monday the 9th of March, there's a trip to Swallow Aquatics from 10 until 3. And on the same day, Monday the 9th, it's Tea and Tech from 10 until 12. Tuesday the 10th of March, it's Bowling from 12 until 3. And on Wednesday the 11th of March and on the 18th, there's yoga from 12:30 until 1:30. Stitch and Natter for Mark is on Thursday the 12th of March from 1 until 3. And the same date and time sees Braille classes, which are by appointment only, and also on the 26th of March. Monday the 16th of March from 11 until 1, it's Burger and Bingo. Right. Friday the 20th of March is the monthly creative writing session from 1 until 3. And on Monday the 23rd, it's archery from 11 until 12:30. Friday the 27th of March welcomes the Latch Hook group from 10 until 12. And finally, on the 27th of March, it's audiobook club from 1:30 until 3. Any queries on any of those, contact the Great Yarmouth Hub on 01493 745 973 or email catherine.bond@visionnorfolk.org.uk, and Catherine is spelt with a C. The hub address is 12 Hall Quay, Great Yarmouth, NR30 1HP. Okay, moving on, we have Alison with some thoughts on spring and Desney with, guess what, you're right, the TV.
Spring is here, or is it? After weeks of wet, cold, grey days this winter, this week has suddenly brought a transformation to our gardens, and maybe to our mood too. It may still only be late February, but it feels as if spring isn't far away. It's not just that we hope this is so. There are signs all around us that the seasons are gradually changing. When does spring really start? Of course, the arrival of spring is as much to do with the weather in any given year as with anything else. However, there are two first day of spring dates. The 1st of March is the meteorological start of spring, a date used by weather forecasters, who divide the year into four quarters based on annual temperature cycles. The more traditional first day of spring is the 20th or sometimes the 21st of March, the astronomical start of the season, based on the date of the spring equinox, when there is an equal number of hours of daylight and darkness. On either of these dates, it might be pleasantly mild and bright, or bitterly cold. Nobody can do anything about the weather. What about the visible signs of spring? Most of us look out for snowdrops during the second half of January, and despite the constant rain this winter, they seem to have been flowering in profusion. By the beginning of February, crocuses were beginning to appear, and now there are daffodils to be seen on roadside verges and in gardens. Somehow the vibrant colours of these early flowers seem to cheer us all up after the gloomy winter days. Some trees are already starting to show signs of new growth, particularly the blackthorn, which has a beautiful early blossom. Insects are reappearing. I saw my first bee of this year earlier this week. I've also noticed a few small spiders, which may not be to everybody's liking. The birds are active too, seeking food to give them the energy to build nests. Suddenly the bird song is much louder and more complex. The days are getting longer, as we have almost 11 hours of daylight now, compared to 8 hours just a few weeks ago in December. There's no doubt that people, as well as wildlife, feel more optimistic and active when they wake up to daylight and don't have to put the light on until the early evening. So let's enjoy this milder spell while it lasts. Real spring may not be quite here, but we can feel confident that it will arrive soon.
Where is my mind? I've lost the nerve. This year flew by without a word. I had a plan to cross the world, but haven't left this island. The stores closed down and opened up. I said I'd do a sober month. I failed but tried and wrote this drunk in overwhelming silence. And I'll see my friends when all this ends, but now until then holding out for spring. We can't let winter win. That's why I'm holding out for spring. Oh, what a state we're in. I'll keep holding out for spring. Holidays, the blame gets passed to save a face. The smell of last night's takeaway just tells me I'm a mess. Still watching shows they recommend that don't get good until the end. I could be unwell, but then again, maybe I'm just depressed. And I'll fix my head when all this ends. But now until then, I'm holding out for the spring. We can't let winter win. That's why I'm holding out for spring. Oh, what a state we're in. I'll keep holding out for springtime. Blue skies, rust fades, slowly across my spring. Oh, what a state we're in.
And here's something about television. I don't seem to have done this for quite a while. But if you've been watching or listening to any of the recent Winter Olympics, then you'll probably be interested to know that the Winter Paralympics will be starting at the end of this week. On Channel 4 this time, they'll be the ones covering the games, and the opening is on Friday the 6th of March at 6:30 p.m. And British skiers to look out for include Neil Simpson and Menna Fitzpatrick. They're the ones on skis, apparently. Or snowboarder James Barnes Miller. And in the curling, we have in the mixed doubles Joe Butterfield and Jason Keane. And while we're on the subject of sport, I think there are a few Women's World Cup qualifiers this week: Ukraine versus England, and Czechia versus Wales, and Scotland versus Switzerland. The Scotland-Switzerland match is on BBC Scotland, so I hope there's no Scottish people who were wanting to watch that. It won't be quite so easy. And if you are Welsh, you would be happy to watch it on BBC Two Wales. So, again, you're not getting the best of the pick of the bunch, as you might say. Friday, the Six Nations rugby is on ITV from 7:20 with the kick-off at 8:10, and that's on ITV1. More of that at the end. It seems a while since I did a TV thing, as I've said, so I've missed the start of several new series. And in fact, I was amazed to realise that this is the last week of Silent Witness, which is a popular recurring series. This has been, unbelievably, series 29. but this week's is the final two-episode story, although, of course, you can catch up on the iPlayer with anything you've missed from this and previous series. I think they're all on there. Can you believe that? BBC One, 9 p.m. on Monday and Tuesday if you want to watch the last story. It's also the final week of Heats, at least, on MasterChef The Professional. So if you're a fan of that and you've already missed it up until now, then you can catch up on the iPlayer first, and then you can watch it on Tuesday at 8 p.m. on BBC One and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Also on Wednesday, on Channel 5, there's a gem of a programme called Alice Roberts, Our Hospital Through Time. Now, I've heard Alice Roberts on programmes before, but I wasn't sure how to describe her. Is she a historian or a scientist? Well, when I looked her up, she was described as an academic, and I think that probably is quite a good thing. It didn't actually really answer my question, but that's clearly what she is, and she's clearly a very intelligent lady who knows a lot about, well, a lot about a lot, I suppose. So this series, which is on Channel 5 at 8 p.m, it's a lot about our hospitals and medical history. So, yes, I was right in a way. This week, you can find out how Barts Hospital in London was left penniless when Henry VIII seized all the property of St Bartholomew's Priory, as it was then. Luckily, he relented just weeks before his death and issued a new charter. And we can see Henry's shaky signature, which is just one of the interesting details scattered through this programme. On Thursday, we have two BBC favourites who've returned during my absence. And Dragon's Den is on at 8 p.m. and The Apprentice is on at 9 p.m. But both of them are up to episode 6 next week. 6 out of 14 for Dragon's Den and 6 out of 12 for The Apprentice. Then on Friday, well, we're back to sport again. On BBC One, there's an FA Cup match at 7:45 between Wolverhampton Wanderers and Liverpool. And then there's the Ireland-Wales rugby match on ITV and the Winter Olympics opening ceremony at 6:30 on Channel 4.
Well, that's it for this week. Grapevine is copyright 2026 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Next week, your newsreaders will be Andrew and Alison, with Andrew taking over as presenter as I'm away for a few days. Stop cheering at the back. So, we look forward to your company for that. But in the meantime, we wish you a good week and hope that you stay safe and well. So, from all your friends at Grapevine, it's bye for now.